Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Curanderismo is a system of grassroots healing that's been practiced in many forms in Latin America for centuries. The curanderismo of today is a result of a difficult marriage between conquest and indigenous practices. It's a blend of nature, herbs, touch, religion, and faith. Many practitioners and seekers of healing often seek relief from both curanderos and Western medicine. Historian Dr. Jennifer Koshatka-Seaman is a lecturer at the Metropolitan State University of Denver. Her extensive research on faith healing in the U.S.-Mexico borderlands is detailed in the book Borderlands Curanderos, The Worlds of Santa Teresa Urrea and Don Pedrito Jaramillo. These two curanderos of the 19th and early 20th century not just provided healing to their border communities, but they filled a necessary service that was being denied to Mexicans and Mexican Americans by racist institutions on both sides of the border. Seaman says her entry into the world of curanderismo came when she worked at a Denton, Texas bookstore as a graduate student.
The basement was kind of my world, which was what the history books were. And we had a whole like Texana section. And the couple of my friends that worked down there knew my interest that I was going to be doing graduate work in history in the borderlands and my interest in really women in history and women sort of that, I mean, I would call them like underdogs, or I'm always really interested in history about those people that maybe are not so celebrated in our traditional history books. So, and also my interest in just spirituality and the history of spirituality and religion. All that is to say, then one of my friends gives me this book called Teresita by William Curry Holden. And Teresita is what historians would call like a hagiography. So it's a history of Teresa Urrea, and it's based on tons of research. In fact, William Curry Holden's papers at Texas Tech University was my first kind of archival research I did on her. It reads sort of like a novel, you know, but there's no citations, you know, it's not an academic work of history, but it's really interesting. And so it's about Teresa Urrea, this curandera, which was a new word to me that I had to do some research. So I just became fascinated with her life, like so many people are fascinated with, and rightfully so, her incredible life. So I read that, and I was just starting graduate school at SMU. The PhD program there was history of the border, history of Southwest. So all of our kind of topics sort of at that point fell into that area. But I mentioned to one of my professors, David Weber, who has since passed away, that I was reading this book about Teresa Urrea and curanderismo. And he said, you should do a seminar paper on her, you know, a literature review. And that's how it started. And I just continued to read sort of broadly about curanderismo. And then as I continued to do more and more research, I found out that, of course, she's not the only curandera, of course, that this is this really beautiful and interesting practice. She's this extraordinarily sort of famous, in a way, curandera that really becomes a folk saint. They call her Santa Teresa sometimes. And then I came to know about Don Pedrito. So doing research on Teresita and curanderismo in places like El Paso, and I eventually then learn about Don Pedrito, this other curandero from the other side of the border. So Teresa's over on the western border between the United States and Mexico. Don Pedrito's in the Rio Grande Valley. And then I started to meet other curanderos and curanderas through my process of doing research, and people of Mexican descent that are very familiar, as you say, with this practice, that were giving me just their take on it and they're telling me their stories. Norma, it just continued to kind of blossom and grow the more that I researched this in graduate school, until I kind of distilled what would be my dissertation around these two healers in their more sort of political contexts, which is kind of where the book goes. Then it uses their lives to talk about all these other things that their lives touch on and their healings practices touch on in the borderlands over the turn of the 20th century.
You've met with curanderas and curanderos, obviously, in your research. Have you ever been to one as a participant in one of their practices?
So yes, so one of the places I went for research was New Mexico, Albuquerque. The University of New Mexico there has a program they do every summer, and they do this Healing Without Borders seminar, this 2-week seminar, and it's bringing healers from Mexico, local healers from the New Mexico area, and they give talks and healing demonstrations. It's really fantastic. So you could get healings there. You could get limpias, kind of a cleansing, like a spiritual sort of cleansing and sweeping of the body. So during my time there, I was there as an academic doing research, taking lots and lots of notes, but it was really hard not to get drawn into seeing or wanting to have one of these experiences. There was a lot of people that were coming to these healers to really get healing. And I didn't want to sort of like be like, hey, I want to do this as sort of this novelty thing. So during that time, I didn't get a healing, but I later did by a different healer that I met in a different scenario, just got a limpia. In fact, my husband and I got limpias together, and it was really nice. We didn't come to this healer, this curandero, in New Mexico for like a specific malady, just kind of like a kind of rejuvenation. And I'm a very open person, even though I'm, of course, an academic and my research is very archival mostly, but I also am just skeptical academically, but I'm not skeptical about people's beliefs. I think that oftentimes people ask me, do I believe in curanderismo when I've given papers and talks? Absolutely, I believe in it. How can you say that this healing practice that people have done for centuries and continue to do isn't efficacious or isn't effective for people? But that's an interesting question I get a lot. And so I sometimes share this story of this one limpia I got. Again, it wasn't that I came in with a particular malady and then it was healed, like so many of the stories that I relay in Borderlands Curanderos are about these specific instances where people are healed of a specific malady. One of my friends or woman that I've met, Danielle Lopez, she's studying at UT San Antonio, and she also is a curandera. And I've interviewed her, and just having conversations with her about what her practice is like is very interesting to me. And so yes, my long-winded answer of saying that I've read about healings, but I also like to be very respectful of the space around healing and all that kind of thing as well. But I've met some wonderful, wonderful healers, wonderful curanderas especially.
Well, you brought up some interesting points. And so before we actually talk about Santa Teresa and Don Pedrito, you mentioned that you had talked to a curandera who is studying at a university. And so this sort of goes contrary to what many people might think about the practice of curanderismo, that it's kind of a backwards, superstitious practice that only people who maybe are not of a particular education level, they're the kinds of people who go to curanderas, or they're the type of people who are curanderos. That's not the case at all.
Not at all. Yes, Norma, I've heard that kind of reflexive answer or assessment of what curanderismo is. And of course, over 150 years ago, the same kinds of things, they're superstitious, they're uneducated. You hear those things today, but in all of my experience, the opposite is actually true. Actually, these are people, whether they're famous or they're community-based healers that the community knows about, they're the wise people, the people that understand how to read a body, and they've often studied healing modalities for years, possibly from a grandmother or, you know, a relative. So like Danielle Lopez is brilliant, and she's studying literature, but also race and healing as a part of that. But as a healer, she's constantly interrogating new ideas and bringing new things into her practice. So this idea that I think kind of stereotype that, like you say, that curanderos are quote unquote ignorant, and so it's only those quote unquote ignorant or uneducated people that would even go to them, is a complete fallacy. It's a way to dismiss a really beautiful and valuable and scientific practice. And that's an argument I make, is that this isn't something that sits outside of scientific medicine, but it's adjacent to it. And a person seeking healing sometimes goes to a doctor, sometimes they go to a curandero for a variety of different reasons. They're not mutually exclusive. This is something Danielle would say to me, that's not that a patient would come to her and she'd say, don't go to doctors, doctors bad. Not at all. They're all healers, but just different approaches, different attentions to different kinds of things. And I think the thing that curanderos do, that some physicians do, of course, but is that they're culturally specific in ways that sometimes a doctor is not, and can really speak to certain kinds of sicknesses, certain kinds of maybe cultural sicknesses, like susto is one of the things that curanderas heal. It's fright, but it's also just this feeling of maybe depression or in more intense forms, PTSD, but it can come from experiencing hatred or racism or any kind of assault. So it's this very specific illness that curanderas know how to treat that maybe a physician is unfamiliar with. And so someone suffering in a certain way can, I think, get treatment from both places, but there's a space, there's a really important space for a curandera that modern medicine does not have. So yeah, that notion that it's this quaint, folksy, backward, ignorant practice is something I completely disavow and know to be untrue.
Dr. Jennifer Koshatka-Seaman is a lecturer at the Metropolitan State University of Denver. She's the author of Borderlands Curanderos, The Worlds of Santa Teresa Urrea and Don Pedrito Jaramillo. When we come back, people who become curanderos come to their practice through a higher calling.
That's sort of where their legitimacy comes from in terms of their healing power, knowing that they're healing through this special gift from God.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Two well-known curanderos in the southwestern borderlands were Teresa Urrea and Pedrito Jaramillo. They both came upon their gift, their don, in a similar fashion. They each suffered some sort of malady that put them in a trance-like state. When they emerged into consciousness, they both say they were granted the gift to heal. Historian Dr. Jennifer Koshatka-Seaman has written about these two faith healers in the book Borderlands Curanderos, The Worlds of Santa Teresa Urrea and Don Pedrito Jaramillo. Despite their similarities, Seaman says much differentiated the two healers, including their struggles against the establishment.
They both have these experiences in the practice of curanderismo called the Don experience, like D-O-N, the gift of healing. Teresa gets hers when she has this very strange sort of episode that goes on for several weeks when she's in this kind of trance state. And that's when she has her vision, or that's when she's given her gift, her don. And then Don Pedrito, a different context, but he's an older gentleman and he falls off his horse, goes unconscious again, goes into this kind of liminal state, this kind of in between of sleep and waking, or in between life and death, but the state where you're not fully present, but that's when this spiritual gift comes to you. So yeah, they had these gifts, and for their believers, the people that believe in them, and that's an important part of their story. That's sort of where their legitimacy comes from in terms of their healing power, knowing that they're healing through this special gift from God. And the kind of very Catholic, kind of Christian context of both Mexico and the border region, of course, is, you know, Catholicism is very strong. But this idea that the healer is healing through the power of God. And it's this gift that's been given, really almost a mandate. This is what you're going to do. You're going to heal people. And so this kind of gift and this the mandate that comes with it to heal people freely is what they carry through their lives and is part of why their adherents believe in them. And I think the part of where their power comes from in terms of the power in their communities, in that belief that this kind of power is working through them. So there's these really beautiful and striking similarities, which I think speak to this cultural practice that is pervasive across Mexico and in the border, and of course in other regions of the United States and the world where people of Mexican descent and Latinx people understand this practice. But as you say too, Norma, there's differences. And one of the big differences is that Teresita was kicked out of Mexico in 1890. By the president of Mexico, Porfirio Diaz. Some call him a dictator, and I would say maybe rightfully so. He stayed in power for 30 years, and he didn't really tolerate any resistance or critique of his policies or his regime. And Teresita spoke out openly against his government in Sonora when she lived in Mexico. She spoke about Diaz and the things that he was doing to the indigenous peoples in the region she was from, northwestern Mexico, Sonora, Sinaloa, the Yaqui, Mayo, Tehuelco. She was part Tehuelco. That's what her mother was. These are different indigenous groups, but all in this region. And the Mexican government at this time had been trying to dispossess these peoples of their land and resources for a variety of reasons. And she would speak out when people would come to her to be healed. Hundreds of people would come, including some of these indigenous peoples. And she would say things, you don't have to give up your land. You don't have to follow the dictates of the government or what the governor or Diaz tells you to do. She would also say things like, you don't have to go to priests to be forgiven for your sins or to get baptism. I mean, these things are just very radical and quite dangerous things to say. And really, this is what caused her to be expelled from Mexico and why she crossed the border. So she was very political, even though in later interviews, she'll often say, I had nothing to do with these rebellions. You know, I am just healing people. They love me because I heal them, but I'm not writing manifestos. And she says that, but the evidence shows very much otherwise, that she was explicitly political. So here you have Teresa Urrea, this 18, 19-year-old curandera. She's healing people, but she's also saying, you don't have to listen to these authorities. You can disrupt these power structures. And this gets her into trouble. Yet she's fascinating because she does very clearly, we can see the political and then the healing with her. Whereas with Don Pedrito, he's more sort of laid back, but very much he's a part of that period, especially where there's beginning to be lynchings, but he's very much there during those sedicioso uprisings, but he doesn't talk about it, or we don't have his words. He seems very what we call apolitical. However, here he is right in the middle of that. And I spent so long trying to find something that he said about that. But the only connections I can make, and that I had help from people from the South Texas community, from Falfurrias, some of the people that he's healed that talked about his healing were families that were connected to or had people that were definitely part of the resistance against the violence of the Texas Rangers. So he doesn't explicitly say these things. He's not anti-clerical. He's not anti-Diaz in the way that Teresa Urrea is, but he's sitting right in the middle of this, you know, real powder keg of white supremacist uprisings and violence. But what he does is he heals. The state of Texas actually uses his healing practice on his little rancho in Los Olmos, which is about 70 miles north of the border, as a distribution point for state resources when there's a drought in this region. So he's a known figure. You know, he is known as a good person of the community, even for those people that maybe don't believe in or follow a curandero. And I found those in my research as well. There are Tejanos and Mexicanos that don't go to curanderos. And so you see these stories where even within a family, like the Canales family, for example, J.T. Canales, a very famous Tejano who fought the Texas Rangers and founder of LULAC. Don Pedrito heals Doña Tomesita Canales, but her husband, J.T. Canales' father, at first doesn't want to bring the curandero in. He brings doctors in. And then finally, when, you know, they're at their wits' end, they send for Don Pedrito for a cure. This is what heals Doña Tomesito. So he is right there in this political context, but we see him as a healer, as a benefactor of humanity, which is kind of a name sort of given to him as well. So all that is to say, Norma, yes, they're different. They're different people. And even though it's the border region, the contexts are different. But there's also, I think, just different ways that political activity looks. Sometimes when you don't have that archive of resistance, as a historian, I had to really look at what do I have? What do I see in the oral histories and the sources? And how do I kind of triangulate that with what I know is happening at that time? Speculation is not a word we like to use as historians. We, you know, want to be sure in our arguments, of course, and what the archives and what the documents tell us. But I think when there's enough evidence that we know that these acts of violence were happening across this region, and here is Don Pedrito, this major sort of figure of this period, healing people, that is a political act. Healing and caring for people, feeding them, healing their bodies, being a place where they can come safely is, I think, a political act in a different kind of way than maybe Teresita saying, openly speaking out against Diaz and possibly a part of this whole group of resistance against Diaz that were very explicitly political, laying out the evils of the Diaz regime. So both of them, to me, were really part of this kind of move to heal people's bodies, but also the kind of racial injustice of that period as well.
Dr. Jennifer Koshatka-Seaman is a lecturer at the Metropolitan State University of Denver. She's the author of Borderlands Curanderos, The Worlds of Santa Teresa Urrea and Don Pedrito Jaramillo. There's more to our conversation. Listen next week. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show online at tpr.org and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Bree Kirkham. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.